Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Empress of Salt and Fortune by Nyi Vo, narrated by Cindy Kay. Chapter 1. Something wants to eat you, called Almost Brilliant from her perch in a nearby tree, and I shall not be sorry if it does. Chiming bells. G rolled to their feet, glancing around the perimeter and squinting at the jangling string of bells that surrounded the small campsite. For a moment, they were back at the Abbey and Singing Hills, late for another round of prayers, chores, and lessons. But Singing Hills did not smell of ghosts and damp pine boughs. Singing Hills did not make the hairs on G's arms rise up in alarm or their heart lurch with panic. The bells were still again. Whatever it is, it's past. It's safe to come down. The hoopoe chirped something that managed to convey both suspicion and exasperation in a two-tone call. But she came down to settle on G's head, shifting uneasily. The protections must still be up. We're very close to Lake Scarlet now. We wouldn't have even gotten this far if they were. G considered for a moment. And then they stepped into their sandals and ducked under the belled string. Almost Brilliant fluttered up in alarm before coming down to land on G's shoulder this time. Cleric G, go back to your campsite. You are going to get killed, and then I will have to tell the Divine how terribly irresponsible you were.
Be sure to make a good account of it, G said absently.
Hush now. I think I can see what made that racket. The hoopoe made a disgruntled rustling noise, but she dug her claws more firmly into G's shoulder. Despite their bravado, the nation's feathery weight on their shoulder was a comfort, and G reached up to stroke her crest gently before walking between the pines. They knew that there was no road there. They had crossed the white pine copse earlier that day, and though they could see the remnants of a road underneath the overgrown bracken and fallen boughs, it wouldn't have let a dog cart through. G suspected that the road had once connected Lake Scarlet to the Royal Highway. In the days before the lake had been taken off every map and effectively disappeared by a highly dedicated and skilled imperial sorcerer. There was no road there during the day, but obviously at night things were different. The road ran as broad as a barge through the trees, and ranged on either side were faded ghosts, the former guardians of Lake Scarlet. Even a few months ago, G knew, the ghosts would have fallen on any living thing that crossed their path, tearing them to pieces, and then crying because they were still so hungry. Now, though, they had eyes for nothing but the palanquin coming down the ghost road from the east, the direction of Lake Scarlet. It was borne by 6 veiled men. Their feet did not quite touch the ground. In the moonlight, it was all silvered, but she could tell that, by all rights, it should be swathed in imperial red and gold, the mammoth and lion of the empire embroidered in lavish detail on the curtains. There was only one woman in the world who had the right to show the mammoth and the lion, and she was to be crowned in her first dragon court in the capital. Well, thought G, curling their hand around Almost Brilliant for comfort. Only one living woman. G bowed as low as the ghosts around them as the palanquin went by, wishing with all their might that the late empress would open the drapes and show her face. Would it be the wrinkled woman swathed in thick silks G had once glimpsed as a child on Hoxen? Or would it be a far younger woman? The Empress of Salt and Fortune, as she had first come to Un, before the end of the eternal summer, and before the mammoth had trampled the lion. When G straightened, ghosts and road and empress were gone, leaving nothing behind but G's own pounding heart. Did you see that? They asked Almost Brilliant, who had finally stopped shivering.
Yes,
said the hoopoe, her normally shrill tone subdued.
That was worth being terrified that you were going to die in a truly terrible fashion.
G laughed, smoothing a finger over Almost Brilliant's crest, and starting the short walk back to their campsite.
Come on, we can get a few more hours of sleep before we need to pack up and start walking again.
It took another 2 days' walk through the birch barrens before they came to the narrow beach of Lake Scarlet at dusk. The lake itself was almost perfectly circular, formed from the death of a falling star. And farther down the beach, G saw the low green-tiled roof of the former Empress's compound. To their surprise, there was a lantern lit on the porch built over the water. Don't tell me it's looters already. As they watched, however, an old woman came walking out of the house with a smart step, and when she reached the railing, she stared out over the water and at the indigo sky above, where the stars were stepping forward. G was just wondering what to do when the old woman caught sight of them.
Come over. You can see the lake better from here.
Almost Brilliant kept her own counsel, so G picked their way along the rocky shore of the beach, coming up the shallow steps to the porch, just as the last salmon light was leaving the sky. The old woman gestured for them to come closer.
Come, you're just in time.
She indicated that G was meant to help themselves from the small dish of sesame crackers on the railing. But she herself looked distracted, gazing over the black water and holding one cracker in her hand. After a few moments, she turned down the lantern wick until it emitted only a sullen glow.
Grandmother, I'm here to—
Shush, girl, it's happening.
Above was the rapidly darkening sky. All around them was the darkness of the birch barrens, and spread out before them was Lake Scarlet, like a mirror reflecting nothing but night. At first, G thought it was their imagination, nothing more than a mirage that came after staring at something too hard. But then they realized that it was real. There was a faint glow coming from the water itself, something like the very last gleam of a dying hearth fire.
What? Shh, watch, just watch.
G held their breath as the soft red glow brightened, sweeping across the lake like the sparks of New Year fireworks. It was brilliant, too hard to look at so very closely, and it flooded the water, enough so they could make out individual trees on the beach, the black silhouette of the night birds on the water, and the seamed face of the woman standing next to them, creased in pleasure.
I was hoping it would go tonight. It's still a little cold yet, but it has come even earlier in some years.
G stood side by side with the woman, staring out over the pyrotechnic display before them. Just a short while after the red lights came up to their full brightness, they started to dim again. G counted in their head. When they had reached 100, there was only a faint reddish glow to the water. The old woman sighed happily as she turned the lamp back up.
Every time, it is like the first, and I've not seen it in 60 years. Come inside, it's still too cold for my brittle bones.
G was old enough to know that no one was harmless, and still young enough to obey instantly that tone of command from an older woman. They followed her into the residence, where she lit several paper lamps. There was a damp chill to the small room they sat in, but the light helped a little. They sat together on the leather cushions around the empty hearth, and the old woman looked a little closer at G, taking in their shaved head, belled string, and indigo robes.
Oh, I see I was mistaken. Not a girl at all, but a cleric.
G smiled. It's an easy mistake, Grandmother, but yes, I'm Cleric G from the Singing Hills Abbey,
This little feathery menace is almost brilliant. Almost Brilliant whooped in indignation at being so described, and showed off her manners by alighting in front of their hostess and talking the boards in front of her twice with her narrow beak. "Most honored to make your acquaintance, matriarch," Almost Brilliant said in her grumbling, gravelly voice.
"And I yours, Mistress Almost Brilliant. If your cleric is from the Singing Hills, you must be a Nayshin, are you not?"
Almost Brilliant's feathers fluffed out in pride.
"Yes, matriarch, I'm descended from the line of Ever Victorious and Always Kind. Our memories go all the way back to the Shin Dynasty."
"What a pleasure. They killed so many of your kind during the reign of Emperor Song. I was not sure I would ever see another."
The Singing Hills aviary was torched, but our divine at the time sent three pairs of nesting couples to their relatives across the Hu River, said Chi. Among them were Almost Brilliant's great-grandparents.
"If you know about the nation, grandmother, you must know how they need to have a place and a name for everything." "And I imagine you do as well, don't you, cleric?" "Very well. My family name is Sun, but I have always been called Rabbit," she grinned, showing two teeth that were indeed longer than the ones around them. "Children used to tease me about it when I was young, but I am very old now, and I have never lost a single tooth."
Almost Brilliant whistled in satisfaction, and G grinned. "Welcome to your place in history, grandmother. Do you live nearby? I didn't think anyone was likely to beat me to Lake Scarlet when the word came down about the declassification."
"I have family that run an inn along the road. It's funny. The locals think the area is cursed from the red glow of the lake. But I've always thought it beautiful, like bonfires and fireworks. But now that you are here, and Almost Brilliant as well, I am pleased that the true history of Lake Scarlet will be told."
G smiled at Rabbit's words. She sounded a little like the former divine, who had always encouraged their acolytes to speak to the florists and the bakers as much as to the warlords and magistrates. "Accuracy above all things. You will never remember the great if you do not remember the small." "I am due in the capital for the eclipse next month and the new empress's first dragon court. But I was at Kailin when the word came down that all of the sites put under imperial lock during Empress Inyo's reign were being declassified. I was so close to Lake Scarlet that I couldn't resist." Rabbit laughed in a friendly way.
"Couldn't resist being the first to unearth thriving fortune secrets, either, could you, Cleric G?"
"I won't deny that ambition has its part to play in my stopping, but I've never heard the name Thriving Fortune before, grandmother."
"You wouldn't. It is what the female attendants of Empress Inyo called it when they first came here from the capital. It was a joke, you see. They were all of the court, and it was a bitter thing indeed for them to be sent into the wilderness with a barbarian empress."
G sat very still, and next to them, Almost Brilliant cocked her head to one side.
"It sounds like you knew of them, grandmother," Rabbit snorted. "Of course I did. I came all this way with them, and it was I who told them to hire my father to come up every week with supplies from the main road. They never knew to tip him, or perhaps they thought their cosmopolitan beauty was tip enough. Pah.
I would be grateful, grandmother, for any stories you could tell me of the Empress's time here at Lake Scarlet. I do not have any money, but I will be more than happy to share my food with you, and if you have any chores that need to be done."
"No, cleric. Save your food and your labor. This house is very old, and you will have your work cut out for you if you want to be in the capital for the eclipse. But now I'm tired, and I should retire.
She blew out all save two lanterns, picking one up to carry comfortably in her hand.
You may take the other, and choose whatever room you care to take. I always get up early, and I will be happy to help you with whatever your work entails.
She padded into the darker reaches of the house, and G, and almost Brilliant, listened as her shushing footsteps faded into nothing.
I would go outside if only there were not owls in the pines, Almost Brilliant said unhappily. I do not like the roof over this place.
And I'm not sure I care for the rest, but at least we've been made welcome. After a bit of exploring, they found a storage room nearby, small enough that G could stretch out flat on the floor and feel the walls around all sides. They spread their bedroll on the polished wooden floor, and then carefully and deliberately, they hung their string of bells across the closed panel of the door. Above them, in the rafters, Almost Brilliant made a roost close to the eaves, watching, but saying nothing. When G finally drifted off, a fold of their robe tucked around their body against the spring chill, they did not dream of ghouls or ghosts, but instead of sunlight on bright water, and a rabbit nosing at the makeup stand of a fine lady. Chapter 2. Robe. Silk, silk thread, ruby bead. Green background embroidered with darker green leaves. A single red ruby beetle bead rests on a green leaf on the right arm. Sleeping robe. Silk, muslin, silk thread. Mulberry muslin edged with white silk. The archaic characters for restful sleep embroidered inside the collar. Tunic. White fur, black fur, suede and ivory. White fur striped with black along the sleeves. A pattern of waves has been shaved into the fur. The inside is lined with suede, and the throat closed with an ivory toggle.
That's a tooth.
Chi and Almost Brilliant looked up as Rabbit came in with four small bowls on a tray. One was filled with fatty scraps that she set in front of Almost Brilliant, who flapped down from the rafters to peck at them with pleasure.
A tooth? Asked G, touching the ivory carefully.
It was smooth under their fingers, and carved with curling lines that hurt their eyes when they looked at it too closely. The entire sealskin tunic was made with consummate skill, but it was easily as heavy on its own as any of the four silk dresses that were bundled in the cedar chest with it.
Yes, come eat some pounded rice, and I shall tell you what the Empress told me.
G came to sit across from Rabbit with the tray between them. They had not lost their wariness from the night before. But in the daylight, Rabbit looked like so many of the lay sisters who were constantly in and out of the abbey, as much fixtures as the stone hoopoes that studded the walls, or the smell of wood pulp being milled into sheets of paper. The pounded rice was still warm and flavored with birch water, and the two of them ate companionably for a while, scooping the rice into their mouths with spooned fingers and cleaning them in the bowl of water. Rabbit rinsed her bowl neatly before setting it aside. And she smiled at the white seal fur dress as if it were an old acquaintance spotted in the marketplace.
I suppose you have guessed by now that I am quite at home in this old place. It is true that my family is from this region, but when I was only 5, the county sent me along with 100 san of birch water, 30 young goats, and 50 caskets of orange dye to the capital. It was meant to be 55 caskets of dye, you see. And they hoped if they sent me along that the tax collectors would be forgiving. I suppose they were. And I spent the next 4 years scrubbing the Palace of Gleaming Light,
never raising my head. I got to know the place by the baseboards, the wood of the floors, the smell of the paper screens, and the way that lamp oil burned all night, never letting the darkness approach his most divine presence, the Emperor of Pine and Steel, Emperor Sung. I might have been a rabbit-toothed girl from the provinces, but I worked so well that when I was 10, I had been promoted to cleaning the women's quarters. I was so proud when they gave me the veil that marked me as one of the servants of the inner house. If I could have written then, I would have written to my father and mother of how their daughter, veiled and wearing household green, was lined up along the Paulownia Hall with 200 others to greet the new empress from the north. The Royal Household Agency positioned us before dawn, prowling up and down the lines as nervously as cats, and lashing out with their horsehair whips when we slouched or yawned. More than one girl fainted, but I was a strong thing, and I stood like a statue until past noon, when there was a great commotion in the courtyard. We knew from the snapping of banners and the shouts of the guards that the Empress had arrived. She did not come, as her late mother had once threatened, with a battalion of mammoths to bring down the walls of the Palace of Gleaming Light. Instead, she had come only with an honor guard that was barred from the inner palace. So she walked down the long hallway to the court of the Emperor all alone. We had been scolded and smacked and told that if we raised our eyes to the future mother of the Emperor, we would be relegated to cleaning the kitchen refuse pits. I could not help myself, however, and I glanced up to see her pass. History will say she was an ugly woman, but that is not true. She had a foreigner's beauty, like a language we do not know how to read. She was barely taller than I was at 10, and built like an ox drover's daughter. Her two long braids hung over her shoulders as black as ink, and her face was as flat as a dish, and almost perfectly round. Pearl-faced, they call it where she came from, but piggish is what they called it here. She walked past with her spine like one of these birch trees, and she wore this dress, which is as white today as it was then. The seal that dress was made from was killed by her brother on his first hunt. Patient as the unending ice itself, he had stalked it for days at the breathing holes where they come up, and when it rose, it was as large as a man. The toggle is one of its teeth, carved by her uncle. Her brother and uncle, whose names are now only spoken in the mortuary halls of Ingrusk, were killed just a year before, at the Battle of Coanum Fords. She would bring with her a wealth of salt, bushes of pearls, and enough whale oil to keep the palace alight for 20 years or more. One of the finest dowries ever to come to an emperor of An. But that was still a week away. When she first came to the Palace of Gleaming Light, Inyo was alone and empty-handed, wearing a splendid seal fur dress that the ladies of the women's quarters could only call strange and barbaric. She never wore this dress again in the palace, but when the emperor sent her into exile, she asked me to pack it carefully. I was 13 then, and it was my job to look after it. I packaged it so carefully between layers and layers of crisp paper, and every 10 days I brought it out to brush away any possible moth eggs or larvae. Even though there was a fashion for seal fur in the capital when Inyo became the empress in truth, there never was a dress like this one again. There never could be. It is beautiful, but every stitch bites into her history, the deaths she left behind, and the home she could not return to. Do you understand? I'm not sure I do, Grandmother. But I listen, and Almost Brilliant will remember. Rabbit flinched a little, as if she had forgotten herself. but for a single faraway moment, she looked like something other than a simple servant woman. But it was there and gone so fast that G could not say for sure what it was. "That is your calling, isn't it? To remember and to mark down?" "It is. Sometimes the things we see do not make sense until many years have gone by. Sometimes it takes generations. We are taught to be content with that." Rabbit tilted her head, looking at G carefully.
"Are you? Content with that, I mean."
"After my novitiate, they sent me to the Kingdom of Zen, where Almost Brilliant and I were to take an account of their summer water festival. We were just meant to be there to record populations, dances, fireworks, things like that. But on the 9th day of the festival, a brown carp cleared the final gate of the city's dams and became a calico dragon. It twisted over the city, bringing down a month of holy rain, and then it was gone. Grandmother, I am very content." Rabbit smiled, standing to pick up the dishes and to offer Almost Brilliant a gentle stroke along her crest.
"Good."
That night, G dreamed of a man in a field of blinding white, waiting at a breathing hole with the patience of the damned for a seal to come up. In their dream, the man heard a call and then, with a smile on his round face, he turned and walked away, leaving his spear behind. Chapter 3. Cup. Polished mahogany inlaid with silver. A silver spider is inlaid into the bottom of the cup. 5 cube dice, bone and gold. The figures inscribed in silver on each side include the moon, a woman, a fish, a cat, a ship, and a needle. Game board. Pale wood and gold paint. Drawn in 6 circles are the moon, a woman, a fish, a cat, a ship, and a needle. G smiled faintly at the game they'd pulled from underneath a sleeping platform, tucked among dusty extra bedding and a 6 pairs of extra slippers, all alike. They tumbled the dice into the cup, rattling them to make a hollow sound. Rabbit glanced over from where she was pulling out long lengths of yellow silk from a compartment in the floor, banners that were designed to show when the emperor was in residence. As far as G knew, no emperor had ever come to Thriving Fortune.
"Do you play?"
"Who in the empire doesn't? My mother put the dice in my hand on my 5th New Year. The board was paper and the dice only stone, but it was the same."
"I wondered more if your vows prevented. But here."
Rabbit came to kneel across from G, passing them a handful of pebbles.
"Go on."
After a moment, G placed all of their pebbles on the lady, elegant, smiling, and dressed in the clothing of the doomed Ku dynasty. Rabbit pulled up her sleeve to reveal a ropey, scarred arm, and she shook the cup high and low before tumbling out the dice with an exhalation of "ta." Like a professional dealer, the dice tumbled across the board, coming up fish, ship, and moon.
"Ah, unlucky," Rabbit said,
sweeping the pebbles towards her.
"You should never put all your money on one thing."
"I like doing it my way," G said with a smile and a shrug. "Was that how the Empress played as well?"
"The Empress, well, she first saw the game after she had been living in the women's quarters for almost a month.
The new Empress was like a ghost. At first, we were all afraid of her, because the women of the north were all thought to be witches and sorceresses. Then they discovered her great secret, that she was only a heartbroken and lonely girl, and she became of no account at all. There were almost 36 accessory wives in the women's quarters at that time, but the most important by far was Cao Fun, the daughter of the Kang clan of the east, until she was banished south to live with the gravestone cutters and charcoal burners. She was more the empress than the empress. and she loved to play Moon Lady Ship. One day, in the chrysanthemum.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?